July 2026, Best Buy's rumors of software's death are greatly exaggerated. Tom Carter's tombstone has five words on it: "Here lies a stubborn Texan." Tom's heart gave out in Gun Barrel, Texas, after he lost his ranch to a giant, very angry woman named Ma Bell, otherwise known as AT&T. It all started because he wanted to talk on the phone while on horseback. In 1959, long before mobile phones were a twinkle in Motorola's eye, Tom, a rancher who spent long days in the saddle on his Dallas farm, figured out a way to hook up a two-way radio to his landline telephone back at the house. When the phone rang, he'd get a radio signal, and then he'd patch the call through without having to dismount. Pleased with his workaround, he dubbed the invention the Carterphone and launched a sales campaign. He hadn't reckoned with Ma Bell. AT&T was the mother of all telephone networks, founded in 1885 by Alexander Graham Bell, the inventor of the telephone. By Tom Carter's day, it was the world's largest company with a monopoly on America's telephone industry. And Ma Bell did not like competition. Uncle Sam and Ma Bell were tight. The government enforced AT&T's price demands, known as tariffs, and prohibited upstart telephone companies from horning in on Big Mama's territory, which she defended viciously. Not only could you not have a non-Bell telephone, you couldn't attach anything to your telephone that didn't come from AT&T. Ma had already lost once, to a funny little company called Hushaphone, which made a plastic voice muffling device to prevent eavesdropping. In 1956, the Supreme Court had ruled that it was fine to connect a mechanical device to a telephone handset, as long as it wasn't damaging the telephone line. But an electronic device like the Carterphone, to AT&T's shark lawyers, was a hell of a lot bigger threat. Ma Bell sued Tom Carter. Tom, stubborn Texan that he was, didn't back down. The case finally went to the Supreme Court in 1968 where, unexpectedly, Tom won. The court expanded on the Hushaphone ruling: you could hook all manner of things, mechanical or electronic, up to a pre-existing communications network, as long as they didn't harm the network. Hushaphone v. United States saved Tom's bacon, though, ultimately, not his farm. Despite the ruling, vindictive Ma Bell pressured Carterphone out of business and eventually drove Tom into early retirement, and eventually his grave, in Gun Barrel. Tom did get some satisfaction out of his victory. He told the New York Times shortly before his death, "We pinned their ears back. We made fools of them." He also unwittingly started the computerized stock terminal industry. Without the Carterphone ruling, we wouldn't have trading terminals today. Stock trading terminals proliferate 3 years after Carterphone. Physics whiz and former missile designer Simon Ramo ginned up one of the first computerized stock quote screens on the market. An industry first, after half a century of ticker tape. Ramo's terminal, called the Telequote, was primitive, a tiny cathode ray screen that displayed stock prices in real time. In order to deliver that data to brokers, it used the Western Union Telegraph Network, another communications monopoly regulated by the Federal Communications Commission, FCC. Western Union was just as protective of its territory as AT&T, and didn't take kindly to stock terminals hooking into its telegraph lines. It refused to lease wires to Ramo's company, Bunker Ramo, triggering another Supreme Court showdown that ultimately ended in Ramo's favor. Trotting out the Hushaphone and Carterphone precedents, the court handed down a landmark 1971 decision known as Computer I. Bunker Ramo, and anyone else who wanted to, could attach their newfangled computers to existing wire networks, as long as those computers didn't damage the wires. Computer I kicked off an instant, intense arms race between a rogues gallery of stock quote terminal providers. Within a couple of years, Bunker Ramo was not the only game in town. Telerate, Quatron, and Ultronics quickly established themselves as contenders. The duds flamed out, like the short-lived Viewtron, which sold in retail stores for $600 and allowed you to check your stocks at home for an eye-watering fee of $1 a minute. As the technology improved, the playing field narrowed. Telerate got bought out by bond broker firm Cantor Fitzgerald, which used the service to broadcast up-to-the-minute U.S. Treasuries prices. Quatron, acquired by banking giant Citicorp, focused on stock market data, while Bunker Ramo's original Telequote ultimately helped power the NASDAQ exchange. By the late 1980s, there were some 426,000 stock monitors active worldwide, all focusing on different specialties and areas of the market. You may be wondering why you've never heard of most of these companies. That would be because of the Bloomberg effect. The all-powerful Bloomberg effect. The now ubiquitous Bloomberg terminal, just another small competitor when it hit the market in 1982, offered something fundamentally different than Quatron or Telerate, where the other companies carefully controlled what information you could see, and showed you slim, pre-selected slices of market data. Bloomberg's brightly color-coded terminal gave you everything: comprehensive stock and bond data, news and analytics, and an exclusive social network for brokers to communicate with each other. More insidiously, though, Bloomberg didn't just feed you information. It offered an open platform where you could build your own programs and write your own tools, in the process, thoroughly enmeshing your company with Bloomberg's system, Excel models, portfolio tracking, trading protocols. Once you've customized the terminal to your liking, it's almost impossible to rip yourself away from it. The more value you build, the more stuck you get. In 1982, company founder and later mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg had cut a deal to sell 20 terminals and a 30% equity stake to Merrill Lynch, which ditched its current provider, Quotron, in order to get on board. From then on, it was a slow downhill slide for Telerate, Quotron, and the other terminal providers, who shrank, imploded, and got absorbed into the bellies of Reuters and Dow Jones. By 2012, Bloomberg had surpassed Reuters, the last competitor standing, to become the highest-earning terminal in the world. Today, the $22 billion Bloomberg runs 350,000 active terminals along with a media and publishing empire, while Michael himself has scored billionaire status, become a finance celebrity, and served three terms as New York City mayor. Artificial intelligence, AI, will never replace Bloomberg, the terminal. It can't. In an interview earlier this year, Bloomberg's CTO Sean Edwards commented on vibe coding, getting AI to do the programming, versus humans. Vibe coding is great for certain things, but you don't vibe code your way through a mission-critical decision-making system. The Bloomberg effect means that, realistically, nothing will replace the Bloomberg terminal. Here at Porter & Company, we've identified a group of Bloomberg effect stocks that we believe are at virtually zero risk of AI disruption. They have wide, structural moats around their businesses protected by things like government regulations, network effects, and high switching costs. Plus, they're best-in-class business models that continue posting new record highs in sales, earnings, and cash flow. Normally, these stocks trade at significant premiums over the market. But over the last 6 to 12 months, their share prices have been crushed on misplaced fears of AI disruption, creating some of the biggest opportunities in the market today. Today's Best Buy is one of these opportunities. It's a software we use ourselves at Porter & Company. Our workflow is so enmeshed with it that ripping it out is too painful to think about. Asked if he'd consider switching, one of our team leads responded, "Not unless you give me some cyanide to swallow down the aspirin." 1. Salesforce, NYSE, CRM. Salesforce, NYSE, CRM, is the world's leading cloud-based customer relationship management platform. Why we recommended Salesforce? Salesforce, NYSE, CRM, is a global leader in cloud-based software, specializing in customer relationship management, CRM, solutions. With a $140 billion market cap, it generates just over $40 billion in annual revenue. Salesforce empowers businesses of all sizes to connect with customers in innovative ways through its integrated online software platform. The company's core offerings include tools for sales, customer service, marketing automation, analytics, and application development. These products are all designed to enhance customer engagement and streamline business processes. With a strong focus on digital transformation, Salesforce serves industries ranging from small startups to Fortune 500 enterprises. Salesforce has 72,000 employees worldwide, serving 150,000 customers. Company revenue has increased at a compound annual growth rate of 24% since 2004, when shares went public. In fact, its revenue has never been down year over year, YI, even during the 2008 global financial crisis or the COVID pandemic. Why Salesforce is a best buy? In a single trading session in February, $285 billion in market cap evaporated from enterprise software stocks like Salesforce. At its April 10th low, the iShares Expanded Tech Software ETF, IGV, had fallen 35% from its 2025 high. The consensus explanation was that artificial intelligence, AI, is eating software, and that software companies' days are numbered. But it's not as simple as that. Not all software companies are dying, and the companies that survive this paradigm shift will be more valuable than the old ones ever were. Salesforce has seen its stock hit heavily recently, down 38% year-to-date, largely driven by this investor anxiety regarding how its traditional user-based licensing model will survive as AI replaces human roles. In response, Salesforce has pivoted its pricing structure toward consumption-based billing, charging per automated task completed rather than per human worker. Its plan seems to be working, as Salesforce is performing strongly. For fiscal Q1 2027, released on May 27, revenue rose 13% YI to $11.1 billion, and EPS of $3.88 beat consensus estimates by 24%, signaling that the company's past cost-cutting efforts are heavily falling to the bottom line. Crucially, its critical growth catalyst, Agentforce, crossed the $1 billion annualized recurring revenue milestone, proving real enterprise adoption. Management returned $27.5 billion to shareholders during the quarter, highlighted by a $25 billion accelerated share repurchase program. While the enterprise software landscape remains sluggish, Salesforce's aggressive buybacks and embrace of AI will continue to drive its growth. At roughly $165 per share, Salesforce trades at less than 12x forward earnings, a multiple that prices it as a disruption victim. That discount won't last long if Salesforce continues to execute. 2. Domino's Pizza, NYSE, DPZ. Domino's Pizza, NYSE, DPZ, is the franchisor of the world's largest pizza chain with annual revenue of around $5 billion. Why we recommended Domino's Pizza? In 1960, Tom Monahan launched a pizza delivery store concept that has since grown into the pizza empire known as Domino's. Today, it's the largest pizza company in the world, with more than 22,000 franchise locations in over 90 countries. The secret to Monahan's success was speed. He borrowed heavily from the McDonald's, MCD, playbook to create an assembly line-style kitchen built for one objective: get hot pizzas into customers' hands within 30 minutes of their order, a goal that remains baked into the company's DNA. Like McDonald's, Domino's thrived not by making the highest quality pizza, but by offering customers the greatest convenience. And as the company expanded in size, the sheer scale of its operations became its most enduring and self-reinforcing competitive advantage. Each new store added into its network shrinks the distance between its pizza kitchens and customers. And with an unmatched global store footprint, Domino's consistently beats the competition with faster delivery times. The company has further expanded its scale advantage by investing into the world's largest logistics chain for sourcing pizza ingredients. Domino's actually makes most of its revenue selling ingredients to franchisees. It doesn't require store owners to buy dough and other supplies from the corporate distribution centers, but it created a natural incentive to do so with a profit-sharing agreement. Any franchisee that sources all of its ingredients from Domino's can earn 50% of the pre-tax profits from the sale. This rebate significantly reduces the net ingredient costs for franchisees. This is a win-win for both parties, as Domino's unmatched bulk purchases give it a major cost advantage. These savings can then be passed on to the consumer, stoking further demand that leads to more Domino's stores, which in turn amplifies the scale advantage for the entire organization. What we like most about Domino's is its franchise business model. As a franchisor, Domino's doesn't pay for any of the costs of launching or operating its restaurants. It simply provides the brand name, infrastructure, and ingredient supply chain in exchange for a 5.5% royalty from every dollar that flows through the register. We love a business that can grow without putting up any of the upfront capital or incurring operating expenses associated with that growth. That's how the company has generated an average return on invested capital, ROIC, of 59% over the last 5 years. And with minimal capital requirements for its core business, Domino's generates $650 million in free cash flow each year. It returns that cash to shareholders through dividends, currently paying a 2.8% annual dividend, and an aggressive share buyback program that has slashed its share count by 38% over the last decade. Why Domino's Pizza is a best buy? This shrinking share count has helped boost the company's earnings per share, EPS, by 400% over the last decade. Historically, the company has traded at a premium valuation given its exceptional ROIC and consistent earnings growth. But after a 50% decline in the stock price, investors have the rare opportunity to buy shares at a dirt cheap price. Domino's shares have taken a hit from the same factor pressuring the entire fast food industry: low-income consumers suffering an erosion of their purchasing power. After 5 years of inflation running hot, these consumers have increasingly pulled back on discretionary purchases, like ordering fast food. We've seen this show up in significant declines in the key demand metric of same-store sales SSS across the entire fast food industry. However, the strength in Domino's brand has shown up in its persistent outperformance over its top two rivals, Pizza Hut and Papa John's, both of which have posted ongoing SSS declines in each of the last 3 years, versus consistently positive SSS results for Domino's. So while Domino's SSS growth rate has declined from its prior trajectory of mid-single-digit or even double-digit growth, down to 1% to 3% in recent years, the company has taken market share throughout the last 3 years of industry-wide declines. In Domino's latest Q2 results published on July 20, SSS were flat while overall retail sales increased 3% YoY, driven by new store openings. We're pleased to see continued appetite for new store openings from franchisees, which sets the stage for continued revenue and earnings growth even in a sluggish SSS environment. Q2 revenue increased 4.3% YoY while EPS grew 6.8% as the company continued reducing its share count with $156 million in share repurchases in the quarter. This puts the company on track to earn $19 per share in 2026, up by a solid 8% YoY. At a recent price of $325, Domino's trades at just 17x the expected EPS 2026, a significant discount to the overall market and Domino's historical valuation. Our view is simple. As long as Domino's remains the clear category winner, we see no reason why it won't emerge from today's downturn in an even stronger position, with greater scale and a more entrenched competitive moat. In the meantime, the macro-driven weakness has created an opportunity to buy shares at just 17x earnings, the lowest valuation of the last 14 years. Investors who bought Domino's when shares last traded this cheaply in 2012 went on to earn a 10x return, or 19% compounded annually. We believe the same opportunity is at hand today. Action to take: buy Domino's Pizza, NYSE, DPZ, up to $467.27 per share. 3. Diageo, NYSE, DAO, Diageo, NYSE, DAO, is the world's largest spirits maker, generating more than $20 billion in annual revenue. Why we recommended Diageo last year? Diageo generated $21 billion in sales from more than 200 brands sold in 180 countries. The company owns many of the world's best-selling spirits brands, including Johnnie Walker Scotch Whiskey, Crown Royal Canadian Whiskey, Smirnoff Vodka, and Don Julio and Casamigos Tequilas. It also owns the third-largest beer brand globally, Guinness, which was founded in 1759 by Arthur Guinness. At the heart of Diageo's business is a core portfolio of forever brands, long-established brands, often more than a century old, that provide a reliable source of consistent profit growth. Diageo's world-class marketing and distribution machine keeps these brands highly visible and selling worldwide. Along the way, the company reinvests a portion of profits from its core portfolio into emerging brands to capitalize on shifting consumer preferences. As the world's largest spirits maker, Diageo uses powerful economies of scale to turbocharge the growth of these emerging brands into global powerhouses. Why Diageo is a best buy today? The company is navigating a regional divide as it works to stabilize its post-pandemic growth. While North America, the company's largest market, remains a significant drag with organic net sales down 9.4%, a massive surge in emerging markets has provided a critical cushion. In Q3 2026 results released May 6, organic sales grew 17.1% in Africa and 16.2% in Latin America and the Caribbean, driven by strong Scotch performance and FIFA World Cup restocking. These gains helped push total organic net sales to a modest 0.3% growth, a notable improvement from the decline seen in the first half of the fiscal year. While the category has fallen out of favor because of GLP-1 anxiety, a younger cohort drinking less, the sober curious narrative, this pessimism is why this stalwart is being discounted. But note that spirits have survived every prior this time is different, from Prohibition forward, and the brands that survived are the ones Diageo holds. The stock trades roughly 31% off its high, near a 52-week low, at less than 13x forward earnings with a 4% yield, a compelling valuation for a business and brand of this caliber. But the bad news is already reflected in the share price and dividend. In its February results, Diageo redirected dividend cash to pay off debt. Looking ahead, management maintained full-year guidance for organic net sales to decline 2% to 3%. A recent tactical boost emerged on April 30 following reports of potential tariff removals on Scotch whiskey, providing some relief to valuation levels that recently hit 20-year lows. While the emerging market momentum is promising, a sustained stock recovery likely depends on stabilizing the North American portfolio and on the August Capital Markets Day, where Diageo's leadership team will unveil a comprehensive strategic refresh for the company. New CEO Dave Lewis will deliver a full strategic refresh alongside fiscal year results on August 6, when the market will get its first real read on whether North America begins to recover. We are adding Diageo as a best buy. The beverage giant is a franchise trading at a distressed multiple, with a now defensible dividend, ahead of the August news that could push shares higher. Action to take: buy Diageo, NYSE, DAO, up $113.52. Every month, we highlight three current recommendations that are at an attractive buy point, and we include those with the best buying opportunity as our best buys. While we sometimes alternate which companies we list as our best buys, removing a stock from the list does not necessarily mean we no longer recommend it, nor does it imply a recommendation to sell shares in that company once it is no longer a best buys. It's only that the new picks present an even more compelling investment opportunity. Every month, we highlight three current recommendations that are at an attractive buy point, and we include those with the best buying opportunity as our best buys. While we sometimes alternate which companies we list as our best buys, Removing a stock from the list does not necessarily mean we no longer recommend it, nor does it imply a recommendation to sell shares in that company once it is no longer a best buys. It's only that the new picks present an even more compelling investment opportunity. Porter & Company. Stevenson, Maryland.